This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Rich Cioli Show Podcast.
The impeachment trial heats up. Pressure on Apple heats up to unlock the iPhone. And the question, of course, is whether or not the Republican senators will stick with the president during the impeachment trial. Welcome back to the show. Great to have you. Happy Friday. The Cioli Show on Twitter at Rich Cioli and 855-839-1210. I want to welcome back to the show. I haven't had him on in a while, and I've missed him. The great Andrew C. McCarthy from National Review. Andy, I got to tell you, man, your piece on Apple and the iPhone was one of the best things I've ever read. I think probably one of the best things you've ever written. So welcome back.
Rich, thanks so much. That's very kind of you. I appreciate it.
You know, you outline in there exactly why it is that we should say no to more of the federal government. As you put it, you know, they since 9/11, they've been doing all this stuff, and they've been saying, we're going to protect you, we're going to protect you. And they've been abusing all this power we've given them to protect us.
Yeah. Now, I want to be fair to them. We also haven't had a replication of 9/11. So you have to, you know, put that in their column. You can argue that even with that, a lot of what's gone on here has been draconian and over the top. I personally believe it has, because I think that a lot of this dragnet type of surveillance they have done, which is indiscriminate, is a lot of harassing innocent people and essentially ignoring their Fourth Amendment rights. And in many ways, that's, you know, that's not – obviously, each individual instance of that, Rich, is not as egregious, even in the same solar system, as being victimized by a terrorist act. But incrementally, what it means is, you know, all of us lose more and more of our privacy rights. And as that happens, the government incrementally becomes both more insensitive to what our rights are and more arrogant about what its capacities are.
And as you put it, the abuse of their powers, in the case certainly with the FISA court, with the Trump campaign, that in many ways, as I see it, Andy, it sort of becomes the inevitable outcome, right? I mean, if you give government all this power and they really don't have anything better to do and they've got people who are politically motivated to use it, and there's nobody really checking them, well, there you go. And so you have to rely on the private sector in some ways to be able to be a check for us. And I think about it from that perspective. You know, Apple created this product with this encryption to give us a level of security that we probably need right now in this day and age, right?
Well, yeah, that's right. And I also think, you know, Rich, there's a long history in this country of private actors being the backbone of law enforcement. You know, there was no organized federal government and organized federal law enforcement as we know it for the first century plus of the history of this country. So it's not it hasn't been a historically unusual thing to depend on law-abiding people who were the backbone of their culture to be the backbone of law and order. That's fine, but it was always done out of a spirit of public spiritedness, not out of compulsion by law enforcement. They can't commandeer you as a free citizen, as a private citizen, to be an agent of the government. And Apple is in business. They have to weigh what is very important, which is I think it's important to be perceived as public-spirited and to provide cooperation with a good faith law enforcement investigation. There's a lot of reason to think Apple has done that. But at the same time, because of the way the government has conducted itself over the last two decades, privacy has not only become an important imperative for us, it's a commercial commodity that's of importance to the tech businesses, and they have to weigh how their customer base is going to, where it's going to come out on that continuum between how much help do we give to the government versus how exposed and vulnerable do we leave our customer base, because those customers can pick up and go to some, you know, European tech company that isn't bound by the same constraints. So they have to worry about that.
Excellent point. Andy McCarthy's here on Twitter at Andrew C. McCarthy, of course, best-selling author, contributing editor at National Review, and Fox News contributor, former chief assistant U.S. attorney, the guy who got the blind sheik. I want to ask you, Andy, you said on Fox News yesterday, I believe it was, that the best impeachment defense has always been nothing consequential happened. You still think that's the way to go?
Oh, yeah. I don't think. Rich, the thing with that defense is nothing can ever shake it. You know, you never in a in any kind of a an adversarial proceeding, certainly in anything that's like a court case. And this is something, you know, a Senate trial is not exactly like a judicial trial in many ways, but it's the closest thing we have. You never want to take on the burden of proving something that you don't need to prove in order to get to where you need to be bottom line wise in the proceeding. And where President Trump needs to be at the end of this is that whatever they can prove, it falls woefully short of the kind of egregious misconduct that the framers had in mind when they put high crimes and misdemeanors into the Constitution. He doesn't need to prove that there was no quid pro quo. He doesn't need to prove that everything was perfect. You know, I understand why politically, rhetorically, he thinks he needs to say that. But for purposes of a litigating position, you would never go near that, because if you take on the burden of showing something that you don't need to prove, like everything was perfect, then anything they can prove that wasn't perfect becomes an issue all of a sudden. It becomes a bombshell. Whereas he doesn't have to live there. He needs to show that what happened here falls woefully short of impeachable conduct. And as long as he sticks with nothing happened, when under circumstances where we know to a fare thee well that nothing happened, he'll be fine.
Yeah, that's a great point. The idea being that, look, if nothing happened, then this does not rise to then the level of the high crimes and misdemeanors that the founders talked about. And as you put it, you know, this is really ushering in that era of hyper-partisanship. So I guess my question, Andy, is this going to become the new political, how it's going to be in politics, where the majority of the one political party just impeaches the president of the other political party, and then it just goes on and on? You think impeachment is now just going to be just another political weapon? No way, obviously, the way the founders conceived it to be, but to the point where almost everybody's going to be impeached, and it's not even going to matter anymore.
I think it really depends, Rich, on how the next few weeks turn out. I think we're certainly in the danger of the zone where we've entered into exactly what the framers were worried about, which is this partisan use of impeachment as a political weapon on frivolous grounds. And the thing that has always prevented that from happening is the fact that you have to get a two-thirds supermajority to remove the president from the Senate has traditionally stopped the House from trying to impeach over misconduct that is, you know, clearly in the gray area of the excess of the use of presidential power, but isn't worthy of the nuclear option. You know, we used to be able to recognize that there was a difference between, like, jaywalking and capital murder. You know, doesn't mean that the fact that you say that jaywalking is not worthy of the death penalty doesn't mean it's a good thing.
Right.
You know, the fact that, you know, we have some felonies that, you know, we look down our nose at doesn't mean that, yeah, the fact that we don't call for draconian penalties doesn't mean that we approve of the conduct. And what the framers understood was that from time to time, all presidents are going to push the envelope of their power. They're going to either do things that the Constitution doesn't allow them to do, or they're going to take powers the Constitution does give them and use them in overwrought ways. And their expectation was that Congress had a lot of weapons in order to rein that kind of behavior in, principally the power of the purse, the power to conduct hearings, the power to exert political pressure and embarrass the president. And that usually works. So we usually don't go to DEFCON 1 over all misconduct, but they've been so rabid to impeach Trump since before he got in the door. I think they thought that any peg they thought might do the trick, no matter how insufficient it was compared to what high crimes and misdemeanors really are, would do the trick. And the thought experiment I always use with people is, how many people do you know who say, you know, I was really on the fence about Donald Trump until this Ukraine thing happened? You know, nobody thinks that way. The people who want Trump impeached are the people who wanted him impeached before the Ukraine thing ever came along. And most people who, you know, support the president, but he wasn't their first choice. That's certainly the boat that I'm in. You know, I look at the Ukraine thing. I see a lot that's wrong with it. But I also think, you know, number one, this is who Trump is. We all knew that. And number two, the American people elected this guy to be president. So unless he engages in behavior that is so egregious that it prompts a majority of the public so strongly to feel like he needs to be removed that it'll push two-thirds of the Senate to transcend their partisan affiliations and vote to remove him, then you don't have an impeachable offense. So let's get on with the work of the country.
Yeah, well said. Andy McCarthy, always appreciate it, my friend. Great to have you back with us. Andrew C. McCarthy on Twitter. And, of course, I'll post a link to your excellent, excellent piece on the iPhone. You'll be on Fox News later today?
Yeah, about 9 o'clock this morning, I think.
Well, great. Well, listen, my friend, thanks for making time for us, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks so much, Rich.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.